and it sounded interesting. She went to the first meeting, but the club specialized in a very specific genre that did not appeal to Peggy, so she graciously declined membership. She was bummed out. And then the thought crossed her mind, why don't I start my own book club? I can make it be what I want it to be. She emailed a few friends and asked if they had any interest. She told them that she wanted to read entertaining books and nothing too literary or depressing. To her surprise, 5 or 6 ladies said sure, they'd love to join. So she organized the first meeting and all the ladies came. And that's how she kicked off her book club. Peggy decided that whoever hosted the meeting was responsible for nominating 3 books. Everybody attending the meeting got to vote on which book they wanted to read, and the majority won. Doing it this way, people felt like they had a choice. Everybody liked the way Peggy had organized the book club. As the meetings went on, a couple of people invited a friend, so now the club has about 10 members, and on average, 6 or 7 show up for a meeting. Peggy never misses it. Hosting goes from one lady to another, so it's not at the same person's house all the time. The host just puts out wine, soda, water, and some appetizers. It's pretty easy, and everyone seems to enjoy it. And unlike some other book clubs, these ladies actually discussed the book, which was really important to Peggy. A couple of ladies who joined Peggy's group complained that the clubs they had tried before were way too social. People never talked about the books. Peggy's group has been going for 2 years and nobody's quit. To her mind, it's a big success, and she looks forward to going every month and reading books she probably never would have picked out herself. Book clubs are very popular. Check the local library. Libraries usually have many of these clubs. There might be one in your neighborhood or through your church. Ask around to find out what's happening. And definitely consider starting your own club like Peggy did. Do you love music? Dave was a drummer when he was young. He and some guys had a band, much like every other music buff he knew. By college, he'd left the drums at home, and once he started working as a software developer, he never had time, so playing music became a thing of the past. Dave retired in his late 50s and decided to take some drum lessons and see if he could still do it. He found a local music shop and went in to talk to them. I wanted to see if I can still play. Do you rent drums? He asked. Of course they did. So he loaded up the car and went home and put on some rock and roll and began to jam out. It was still fun. He then went back to the store and asked if they knew any bands with older guys who might need a drummer. They didn't, but they said he could put a notice on their board. The store sent a weekly email to its customers and always included people looking for gigs and those selling used stuff. Weeks went by and I forgot about it, Dave says. Then one night my phone rang and there was a group of men in their 50s just like me. They played community events and their drummer had gotten hurt and couldn't play anymore. Did I want to audition? I was stoked. I also was smart enough to get a playlist, and I practiced their songs before I went. I sweated it out, but I fit in okay, and so that is how I became part of the Rockin' Oldies. We play at special events and summer festivals. We sure have a lot of fun. It's a great way to be a musician. My childhood secret dream finally came true. So many boomers love music. Many get involved with singing or playing an instrument. Music shops and talking to people in bands are the best ways to find opportunities to break into this field. Music shops often have a list of people who teach different instruments, so if you need instruction, start by asking at the music store. Shopping. Joanne loved to shop. It was one of her main hobbies when she was working. A customer service exec, she often traveled and found herself in malls. I'd be walking through the mall or in a store, and I'd think about how the store could improve its service. It would be an automatic thought as I went off to buy a new outfit or shoes. In her mid-50s, Joanne retired but found that she got bored really quickly. She needed something interesting to do and found herself spending a lot of time in the malls. That's when the idea hit her. I should be a mystery shopper. She started networking with friends and made some phone calls to some of the big stores and restaurants in her area. They gave her the number of the agency they used. This is how she became a mystery shopper. It's so easy. I go in and I shop. I eat or buy something and rate the experience. If I eat, they pay for my meal. When I buy something, I take it back that same day and write about the return experience too. The returns are often the most interesting. Lots of people make you feel guilty about bringing something back. That's a no-no, she says. You don't get much money for your time, about $15 or $20 an hour to do the shopping, plus another hour or so to write up the report. But that didn't matter to Joanne. She absolutely loved it. The job was a perfect fit with her customer service background and her love of shopping. She had to be careful to make sure she got the name of the person who waited on her, or people who didn't wait on her, or if too many salespeople bugged her when she first walked into the store. Mystery shoppers are used by a lot of businesses that want to get feedback on what the customer experience is really like. Maybe this is a job you didn't know about but could enjoy. The nice thing about this position is that you can do it wherever you live, even if you're a snowbird. Dancing with Stars in Your Eyes. I married my third wife when I was 60, just as I was retiring, reveals Dave. I adored Anne and had been single for over 8 years when we met on Match.com. She told me that she enjoyed many things, and like most women, she loved to dance. Me, I have two left feet and am embarrassed to go out on the dance floor. We planned on doing a luxury cruise for our honeymoon. Since she had been a dancer since high school and loved it so much, I went to Arthur Murray's and secretly signed up for dance lessons. I went for months. Crazy thing is, I enjoyed it. When we got married, Anne was surprised when I went out on the dance floor and was smooth and accomplished out there, shaking my booty. She thought it was the nicest present I could have given her. The new couple returned home and got two free lessons from Arthur Murray as a wedding gift. Anne said, "Let's try ballroom dancing." So they did. It turned out to be how they spent the weekend. They would go to dances, and eventually they joined in the competition. "It's all great fun for me," Dave explains. "She loves finding dresses and glamming it up for these things. I love the way she smiles at me when we dance. Been a crazy thing for us that I never thought I'd be doing. Not only do I do it, but I'm smiling like a fool the entire time, holding my adorable wife." There are so many hobbies and interests you can pursue. Many have associations and national events you can get involved in. Sharing something with your spouse is a wonderful idea. The key factor is to remember that just because you haven't done something before or mastered it doesn't mean you can't do it now. Be open to new experiences. Try new things. Say yes when people invite you. Sharing that hobby. "Winter months are cold in Minnesota," says Deb, who loves quilting and would spend the cold weekdays working on her sewing machine to create beautiful quilts for her family and friends. Her daughter worked at a charity, and every year they asked Deb to create a beautiful quilt to raffle. She had a job working for a manufacturer as a procurement and planning coordinator. When her company offered an early retirement package at 61, Deb took it. One day she was at the quilting store talking with Pam, the owner, when Pam said she'd been thinking of offering some introductory quilting classes and wondered if Deb would be interested in teaching them. "I had never taught before," Deb says, "but I did teach my daughter to quilt, and she certainly loves the craft. So let's try it," she told Pam. "This is how my quilting classes began. Now I teach one or two times a week. I also get a discount on any supplies and fabric I buy. And of course I get paid for teaching. This is the perfect job. I do it for free, but it's nice to earn a little extra cash too." Marilee was a stressed out manager when she retired at age 63. She had a hobby collecting gems and minerals. Now that she wasn't working, she found she could pursue this hobby with gusto. Like most collectors, she's not alone. There are many people interested in rocks, she says. She has made many new friends. "I'm now a rock hound," Marilee explains. "My house is my display area. Shelves and cabinets show off different rocks I picked up all over the place," she said. She goes to numerous gem shows and belongs to a group that meets monthly. "The coolest thing ever was going to Tucson this year," Marilee says. "That city becomes a playground for the world of international gem and mineral trading, collecting and bargain hunting when the Tucson Gem, Mineral, and Fossil Showcase arrives. It's the largest show in the country, and it is spread all over the city. In tents by the side of the road, in various hotels, convention centers, exhibit halls, etc. I went with a group of rock hounds, and we had a fabulous time. I have to do this every year. It's the fantasy world for rock lovers like me." Many people are collectors. Some collect baseball cards, especially rookie cards. Others collect coins, stamps, figurines, or porcelain. There are even wealthy men who collect cars. To each their own. It's showtime. Mark and Wendy lived in Florida during the winter. There was a woman in their community who loved producing big events. She had been the state director of a Miss America pageant and missed having all the camaraderie that comes with organizing big events. So she started Showtime, a vaudeville-type show she put together for the local community. Wendy says, "It was absolutely amazing, the quality and all the laughs this production got. People came from miles and miles around to attend the spring event. I had done drama in high school and loved it, but my career as a school principal kept me super busy and never left time to do anything like this." She and her husband joined the troupe. The first year, she got in a skit with several other people. Overall, it was about a 2.5-month commitment from the time you auditioned and said you wanted to be a part of the show to the actual performances. Wendy says, "It was so much fun, and I made instant friends. The program had comedy and music. We actually got standing ovations at the end of the performance." For 3 years, it was the highlight of her Florida days. "It was absolutely the most fun thing I've done in the last 2 decades," she says. Then the lady producer moved away. "We'd all loved it so much that there was a big lobby wanting me to take it over. But I said no. That woman had worked for almost an entire year to come up with the ideas and do all the things necessary to make that production happen. I'd had a big demanding job before I retired. Now I only wanted to have fun. No way was I taking on another job. But I really miss Showtime. I wish we could find another group to do it. Everyone in our community still talks about it." Understandably, you too may want to get involved in groups and fun projects, but not create a full-time volunteer gig for yourself. Being involved with theater is a popular activity. According to the American Association of Community Theater, over 45,000 community theater productions take place in the United States every year. They also offer classes in acting and programs on play production. Look around and you will likely find a local theater group you can get involved in. I heard from people who had done drama in high school or college and never again, who as retirees took on acting roles or non-speaking parts or worked on productions, directing, marketing, designing sets, and doing ticket sales and or makeup. The one thing they have in common is that they love the experience of theater and have a lot of fun working in it. Retirement is meant to be enjoyed. Making money doing your hobby. Does the idea of making some money while working at a hobby appeal to you? This is a new trend that's beginning to emerge among baby boomers in their post-retirement years. They get a fun, paying job. For many people, it's a comfort to be earning some income, whether it's a few hundred or a couple of $1,000s. It may provide the psychological reassurance they need or just extra funds to help support a nicer retirement lifestyle. Here are a few ways to monetize a hobby. Teach others to do what you love. If you elect to be a tutor, you can make anywhere from $25 to $50 an hour. Notifying local school teachers in the subjects you can tutor is the fastest way to get referrals. Advertising on a college campus by posting flyers with an email or phone number tab is another. A third option is to join a tutoring organization like WiseAunt and work for them while they do the marketing. Schools need tutors for all subjects. Think about what you can teach. Painting, glass blowing, photography, music lessons. Offer cooking classes in your home or theirs. One lady offers a Groupon class where she comes to your home and teaches cooking to you and 6 to 8 guests. From that, she gets new students who want more cooking classes. Others teach languages. Some teach computer skills. Offer your services on a local Facebook page. You can also teach through a community college or continuing education program. They are always on the lookout for teachers and new course offerings. Make it and sell it. You don't need to have your own gallery full of pottery or paintings. You can create and then sell them at local farmers markets, community festivals, school or church craft fairs, etc. Whether it's baby clothes, sports-themed items, jewelry, cakes, glass vases, whatever you make, you can sell. If you need ideas, check out Etsy.com, a great place to advertise and sell handmade products. Selling memorabilia. Are you a collector? Are baseball cards your thing? Maybe you go to spring training and get footballs signed by pro players. Signed NHL jerseys? Got an NBA card with a pro signature? Head online to eBay or go to a sports card event and sell off some of your items. You can make some serious profit if you study the market and have popular memorabilia to sell. Bob goes to spring training for baseball. He hits Arizona one season and Florida the next, so he can cover all the teams. Most players are pretty laid back and willing to sign during training seasons. He collects signed baseballs and gets his wife to take a picture of the athlete signing it to prove it's authentic. When his collection began to overrun the shelves at home, he decided to sell a few. He was shocked at how much money he could make doing this. It's a perfect hobby that is quite profitable, even after he subtracts his travel expenses. Teach the business of the hobby. What do you know about? Can you teach others the skills they need to get new clients or sell more wares? If you know a great deal about managing the business of the hobby, you can teach others about it. One man retired and went on to teach how to run a photography business. He had used photographers in his advertising and marketing career and did photography as a hobby. He put together a class and offers it through a continuing education department, teaching the business skills to be more successful making money as a photographer. Major hit. All his classes fill to capacity. He now goes to photography conferences and events and teaches there. By teaching new entrepreneurs and struggling business owners, you can make a big difference and some nice cash. Speak or write about your hobby. Jordan loves the stock market and studies it daily. Over the years, he's been very successful at investing. His neighbors wanted him to put on a class about handling investments, and he volunteered to teach it. Only ladies showed up. They devoured his information and wanted another, more in-depth class. He developed the class, but this time he charged $29, and still his class filled up, but only with ladies. He realized he was sitting on a tiny gold mine. He began a series of investing courses in the area just for women. Writing, editing, and proofing can be a profitable hobby. Many people like the idea of writing, but did you realize you could write about your hobby and earn some money? Best option is look for companies that need writers for their newsletters or website content. Also, get advertisers for your blog or hobby website. You can make money every month as long as they get what they want, eyeballs reading your work. Offer a service. Like cooking? Offer your assistance to help neighbors out with a hot dinner for a small fee. Love pets? You can become a dog walker or be a pet sitter. One lady loved to paint murals, so she put some pictures of what she'd done on the neighborhood Facebook site and got several calls from eager people wanting to hire her to create murals for them in their homes and businesses. Time to finalize a plan about your hobbies. For those seeking a paid position, in part one, you identified several hobbies you would like to be involved with. Some lead more easily to paying jobs. Now, identify the single hobby you want to focus on using the accompanying PDF. Searching online and talking to reference librarians at your local library can help you identify jobs where you could work in that hobby area. See the accompanying PDF. For those just looking to explore a hobby for fun, see the accompanying PDF. Narrow down your options so you can start focusing on one area first. Searching online, investigating if there are meetups in your area, and talking to business owners related to the hobby can help you identify groups and activities to get involved with. See the accompanying PDF. Hobbies can change by season and by location. You may pursue very different things in winter and summer. Engaging in new activities makes life interesting and will enable you to meet new people. Most important, only stick with the hobby if you are having fun. If that changes or the group doesn't click with you, keep on looking. Resources. Always check my website, where we keep up-to-date listings of websites and terrific resources. Things can change quickly. Go to www.myretirementreinvention.com/resources. Oh, the places you can go. Chapter 10, Travel. There is nothing better to stimulate our minds and hearts than travel. What is your fantasy? Spending the winter on a sun-drenched, sandy beach? Living in Europe for a month? Going on a world cruise? I personally want to do the last one, but only after I make it to Australia and go snorkeling in the Great Barrier Reef. We all have dreams about travel. Some retirees travel strictly for leisure, while others combine work and travel to help mitigate the cost of the experience. Once you are no longer working, you have the time to make your dreams come true. What others are doing. Forbes reviewed travel studies and determined retirees' favorite kinds of travel. Although many enjoy a variety of vacation spots, familiar locations remain the most popular. Where we stay once we get there, though, is quickly changing. Globally, almost 1 million Airbnb users are over 60 and seeking out a home to enjoy their vacation or travel experience like a local would. In fact, some people stay home and rent out a room via Airbnb once the kids have moved out. They enjoy meeting and conversing with guests, plus they earn some extra money too. Adventure travel is up, and so are retirees taking RV trips. Biking is replacing golf as a popular option for active holidays. Learning is becoming extremely popular. Educational tours and programs that combine travel and learning are booming. And of course, there is cruising. Around the world cruises grew to more than 23 million passengers, 52% of whom are age 50 or older. Solo travel, as well as multi-generational travel, are on the upswing. Where do boomers like to go? Forbes says retirees, age 50-plus, preferred these travel destinations. In the United States, Hawaii, New York, California, Alaska, Florida. In the world, Italy, Australia, England, Ireland, France. Chris wrote me to say that he was making plans to sail around the world. I bought my first sailboat with lawn mowing money when I was 11. I dragged it two blocks across the neighbor's front lawns to a nearby canal, plunked it in the water, and explored my little bit of Tampa Bay. It was the first of five boats, slowly graduating up to our current boat, a 41-foot around-the-world cruising sailboat. Mostly, I've spent days and weekends trying to create the perfect sail shape and chatting with whomever I could convince to come along. He wrote that his lovely wife, Michelle, looked at him one day and said wistfully, "You know I love you like crazy, but I really miss the world, and Minnesota is so far from everything." Her message to him was clear. If I'm to be happy, I need to get back to traveling the world. That resonated with Chris, and a new plan went into full motion. Next summer, Chris and Michelle will hug the kids goodbye and sail off on their adventure. They will sail through the Great Lakes to Newfoundland and across the North Atlantic to England. They plan to explore the British Isles, the western coast of Europe, and the Mediterranean until they're ready to return to the Caribbean, through the Panama Canal, and out into the Pacific. Quite a plan. It may not be your utopia, but for many sailors out there, it is theirs. Many people would love to explore the world, but need to find a job to make it happen. Chris and Michelle plan to teach English at international schools to finance some of their dream. There are lots of opportunities to make travel the center of your retirement reinvention, as this chapter will detail. Travelers' number one wish is to experience the Northern Lights in person. Experiential trips. TV host and author Rick Steves specializes in trips to Europe. His website advocates smart, affordable, perspective-broadening trips. He encourages Americans to travel as temporary locals. He helps travelers connect much more intimately and authentically with Europe and Europeans for a fraction of what mainstream tourists pay. A popular TV guest on PBS, Rick Steves' organization offers dozens of tours each year. These trips vary in length from 7 to 21 days, and they retail for $2,000 to $5,000 plus airfare. They do have wonderful testimonials, and many people seem to find them to be a terrific experience. Learn more at www.ricksteves.com. Instructional trips appeal to many retirees. Colleges offer some such programs. Rhodes Scholar offers experiences that attract highly educated and interesting attendees. Several retirees mentioned that they had participated in various outdoor adventure experiences. All of these were short-lived, but very memorable. Bicycling was Lois's favorite pastime. When she retired at 62 from her job as an elementary school teacher, she had more time to put into this hobby. At 68, she went off on a European tour with Rhodes Scholar, www.rhodesscholar.org, formerly known as Elder Hostel. Lois went on the bike trip with her 45-year-old daughter. Only one participant needed to be over 55, which is a little recognized fact. Mom and daughter agreed on a bicycle tour of the Provence region of France. For 14 days, they bicycled from town to town and stayed in nice inns. A van followed in case they had any technical issues with their bikes. "We had 14 people in the group," Lois explains, "all from the U.S. Generally, breakfast and dinner were provided. It was delicious, fine, local cuisine. The best part was that at each destination, or at sites along the way, we were met by knowledgeable guides who took the group around and gave us a true picture of this French area. It was fascinating. Our tour leader was from Belgium, spoke fluent English, and was professional and helpful. It was a nice mix of tour time and free time. I was hooked. What a unique way to see Europe and really experience the countryside and learn the history of the region." Lois has taken 5 bike trips in total. 2 other trips to Europe were with international bicycle tours, including barge bike trips, one when she was 75 and one last spring when she was 78. "My friends were no longer strong enough to do an extended bike trip, so I went alone. The group tour went through Belgium. I'm so glad I didn't miss this. I never felt alone for even 1 minute. The tour was a seniors-only trip, and the people were so funny and full of life. The trip was a terrific experience," she says. In comparing the two organizations, Lois noted that both do a good job setting up the tours, getting you from place to place, etc. Where Rhodes Scholar excelled was in its guides for local attractions. They were very knowledgeable and ready when you arrived. That said, Rhodes Scholar trips are more expensive, but have been around since 1975. "While you are not staying in hostels, you are not doing 5-star hotels either, but safe, comfortable local accommodations chosen to give you a feel for the local culture. They have trips that accommodate almost all activity levels with a variety of different activities such as bicycling, rafting, hiking, walking, woodworking, opera, archaeology, and history. There are even intergenerational trips designed for seniors and their grandchildren." Are you the curious type? Interested in unique programs that build your knowledge of another part of the world? The Smithsonian Institution offers travel programs. www.smithsonianjourneys.org that further its important mission, the increase and diffusion of knowledge. Its tours and cruises enrich travelers' lives. A proven leader in culturally enriching, expert-led travel, Smithsonian Journeys offers more than 350 trips lasting up to 30 days on all 7 continents. Every program includes unforgettable experiences that uncover the authentic culture of each destination and provide access unavailable to most travelers. The tour experts are world-class leaders in their fields. Living like a king and queen. This couple definitely did it their way. Michael wrote me this long story about how he lived out his unique fantasy. He wanted to partake in the lifestyle of the rich and famous. This is how he lived out his dream. I'm not sure exactly how we arrived at the idea of being caretakers, but once we started reading the ads for domestic couple positions, working for the ultra-wealthy, the hook was set. When we saw the kind of money that we could make, the kinds of places we could live, and the fringe benefits, we knew we wanted in. I was always kind of a gearhead, liked mechanical things and loved being outdoors, but I ended up with an inside sales, cubicle world job that I absolutely hated. When I lost that job, it turned out to be the best thing that could have happened because it forced me to do some hard thinking about how I wanted to spend the rest of my life. My wife Mary ran a successful daycare business. She loved working with kids, and it was a good business. We were both in our late 50s and ready to reinvent ourselves. At the time, I kept seeing all these executives getting multi-million dollar golden parachutes. In fact, I can remember joking that since we didn't get a golden parachute ourselves, maybe we could latch onto the ankles of someone who did. And in fact, that's almost exactly what we ended up doing. Once we decided what we wanted to do, the question was how. We sent out a bunch of applications, but weren't getting much in the way of responses. The upper echelon domestic couple jobs are generally handled by employment agencies, and they flat out won't talk to you unless you have a minimum of 2 years' experience working in a wealthy household. We had the right skills, and we were well suited for the job, but we couldn't get past the gatekeepers. I'm pretty good at selling myself, but we needed to be able to deal directly with an employer. In January, an ad appeared in the Caretaker Gazette for a domestic couple position in Aspen, Colorado that seemed perfect for us. And it wasn't through an agency. We sent an application right out, but got a nice note back saying that the position had been filled. About 3 months later, the Aspen job turned up in the Gazette again. We put in another application, and one day the phone rang. It was them. After some back and forth, we were offered the job. It was an entry-level job in both pay and duties, but the important thing was we were in. Surprisingly, my wife's daycare experience was key. They had 9 dogs and figured if Mary could take care of kids, she could take care of dogs. The second helpful fact was that we'd lived at high altitude before. Their house is at 9,000 feet. The couple they hired couldn't cope with the altitude and had left after 3 months. So we packed up our car and left our home in Grand Haven, Michigan for Aspen. The job included a free apartment. It was over the garage, but very nice and had the same view they did. We like to joke that it was a million-dollar apartment view. The house in Aspen was 8,000 square feet and quite a showplace. It's been featured in numerous magazines as well as the Wall Street Journal. It was valued at $15 million at the time and was full of art, antiques, furs, jewelry, and who knows what else. When they weren't there, we were responsible for everything, plus their beloved dogs. It was intimidating working in a house like that. I never touched anything I didn't have to. Some little knick-knack on an end table might well cost more than our car. It turned out to be a much more difficult and complicated job than we could have ever imagined. The level of complexity in a house like that boggles the mind. Aside from the sheer physical labor of caring for it, inside and out, you have to understand how it all works and know or learn about an incredible number of subjects. I also had to schedule, supervise, and deal with the small army of outside contractors when I couldn't fix it myself. It takes to keep a place like this running smoothly. But by far the hardest part of the job was dealing with the personalities of the owners. Multi-millionaire types and their spouses have big egos and big personalities, to put it charitably. They aren't patient people either. They are used to having everything they want now. At times, I wanted to tell them that carpenters and plumbers didn't generally have the same kind of response time as, say, the fire department, but of course I didn't. I just put together a team of contractors who understood our special needs at a price and would get there quickly. But there were many perks to the job, too. We'd start our day by loading up a couple of dogs and taking them someplace nice to hike. Mary and I love walking and hiking. We couldn't believe we were getting paid to go hiking in such a beautiful place. We spent 2 years in Aspen and learned a lot. But we wanted to be near our family in Michigan and started looking for jobs that were closer to home. We took a job in Auburn Hills, Michigan. This was a whole different world. The house was 13,000 square feet, plus a guest house and a three-story boathouse with ballroom. There were 10 acres of mowed lawn with intricate landscaping, 4 fountains, a pond, a beach, and 10 acres of woods, all to be maintained by me. The job was a real learning experience, and we added a lot of new skills to our resumes. Mary cooked and we served at parties. I was bartender. We helped put on larger events with more than 150 guests. And I played chauffeur in the Bentley. They liked how we ran things, and after a few months, the job went from caretaker couple to a true estate manager couple position. They asked us to also manage their oceanfront estate in Florida. Mary and I began spending more of our time managing people who did the work, and I learned quite a bit about running an estate long distance with occasional visits. After 2 years, our current job essentially fell into our laps. The house is 22,000 square feet, plus a pool house, carriage house, and 3,000 square foot wine cellar. There are 20 acres of mowed lawn, but there's a full-time groundskeeper, so I have some help. Plus, we got a big raise in pay along with top-notch health insurance. The owners have turned out to be the sweetest people we've ever worked for, and they treat us great. One September, they sent us to their vineyard in Napa for a week to dog sit. They paid for the whole trip, had a stay in the guest house, gave us lots of free wine, a new Jeep to use, and told us to go have fun when we weren't watching the dogs. I suppose the moral of our story is that I now have a new career that quite honestly has turned out to be the best, most challenging, and most satisfying job I've ever had. Mary didn't realize how burned out she'd gotten until she got away from the daycare business, and in spite of working very hard, is finding her new role a very welcome change. The domestic couple business sure isn't for everyone. While the job descriptions make it sound pretty easy, the reality is anything but. At times we can't believe we actually get paid for some of the things we do, but the majority of the time it's the hardest job either of us have ever had. There are a lot of potential pitfalls. It's an odd combination of menial tasks and huge responsibility. I might clean up dog dirt 1 minute, then hop in a Maserati, Bentley, or a classic Cobra 427 to get gas or take it in for service. While driving cars like that might sound like fun, it is until you realize that a flawless Cobra is worth $1 million, and if you scratch it, you'd be out of a job. It's always a bit of a high-wire act. It's fast-paced, high-pressure, intense, and you're on duty 24/7 when the owners are in residence. Now, that is a different lifestyle. For potential house sitters and caretakers, there are jobs that suit anyone's interest and abilities. There are jobs in big cities, rural places, full-time career-type jobs, part-time laid-back-type jobs, ranch or farm jobs, you name it. And you can work in exotic locales all over the world. Mike said to me, it's a wonderful lifestyle, and our only regret is that we didn't get into it sooner. This may not be the kind of work or travel experience you've considered. Maybe you didn't even know these kinds of opportunities for house sitting and caretaking existed. I spoke to Gary Dunn, the editor of the Caretaker Gazette, www.caretaker.org, where people advertise caretaking and house-sitting jobs. He offered some ideas of actual work opportunities from around the world from a recent newsletter. Australia. Looking for a mature couple in New South Wales who are cat lovers and who would like to care for our affectionate house cat from approximately December 23rd to January 10th and then from mid-June to the end of summer. Ranch help needed in Prescott, Arizona. Need some part-time work in exchange for a two-bedroom, two-bath, 1,500-square-foot home in an upscale location. Belize. Wanted. A semi-retired couple to caretake for no less than 4 weeks anytime from March to November. Your primary responsibility is having a presence on the property. Duties include care and feeding of 6 dogs, fishes, watering young plants. National Park Host from May 21st through September 1st, 2016. Must have your own RV. Live-in caretaker. Needed in Port St. Lucie, Florida, for my independent, delightful grandmother. You will need to cook, grocery shop, and take her to church and her doctor appointments. This is a travel work opportunity you might want to consider. Now you know these options are out there and a little more about the work and job skills needed to land them. Teaching English abroad. The desire to live and work abroad is among the fastest growing for boomers, shaping their retirement reinvention. Most are doing this by teaching English. Long popular with college students, organizations such as World Teach, Peace Corps, and International Volunteer HQ now welcome baby boomers. Over 500,000 American retirees receive Social Security benefits in countries other than the United States, according to the Social Security Administration. That figure does not count those baby boomer expatriates who aren't yet eligible for Social Security or have postponed taking it. While most choose to go to Europe, Central American countries are becoming more popular, with some boomers heading to Asia too. Are you a retiree looking to teach abroad? Teaching in exchange for room, board, and a small salary can be a very interesting way to kick off your retirement reinvention. Whether you seek a little adventure in Europe, want to make a difference in a small village in Africa, or wish to live on a tropical beach in Latin America, teaching English offers an endless array of great international opportunities. Hundreds of thousands of English speakers from all walks of life are hired to teach English abroad each year, and in the vast majority of cases, prior teaching experience or even a college degree is not required. Some teachers work on full-time contracts, others tutor, and many elect part-time positions. The demand for English teachers worldwide is high. However, it is worth noting that some countries offer more opportunities and more accommodating job markets than others, especially to more mature travelers when it comes to age restrictions for teaching English abroad. Briefly, here are some regions and countries that make great options for older travelers who want to live and teach English outside the United States. Latin America is a gold mine for English teaching opportunities. Latin America offers a wide range of choices when it comes to destinations and teaching opportunities. In addition, the cost of living, including rent, food, and medical care, in most Latin American nations is low, and the vast majority of schools are happy to hire more mature teachers. Costa Rica is a tropical paradise where the cost of living is low and the people are known for an easygoing approach to life known as pura vida, pure life. Boasting some of the most beautiful rainforests and beaches in the world, Costa Rica is hard to beat when it comes to quality of life, outdoor recreation, living costs, and high demand for native English-speaking language instructors. Mexico offers a vast array of fascinating cultural experiences and spectacular natural beauty. It is also one of the largest job markets in the world for teaching English abroad, and age discrimination is not a factor. Southeast Asia offers hundreds of thousands of opportunities to teach the 500 million people who are learning English. China is the largest job market in the world, but opportunities are limited mostly to retirees under the age of 60. Cambodia, known for the ancient ruins of Angkor Wat, idyllic beaches, and faded colonial charm, isn't as large or as prosperous as nations like South Korea or Japan, but the demand for English teachers is booming, and unlike in many other Asian countries, age is not a restricting factor, and those without a degree can gain employment as well. Thailand offers something for everybody, from turquoise waters and white sandy beaches to colorful street life in Bangkok and lush highlands in the north. English teaching jobs are concentrated in major cities like Bangkok and Chiang Mai, but schools, language institutes, and even universities employ English teachers throughout the country. Western Europe in general has stringent visa requirements, so EU countries like France, Spain, and Italy are more challenging places to find work opportunities. Eastern Europe is another story. Nations like Poland, Hungary, Croatia, and Bulgaria have a huge demand for English teachers, and native English speakers will have no difficulties procuring a work visa. The Czech Republic, located in the heart of Europe, has developed into an important location for business, investment, and tourism in recent years, increasing the demand for English teachers. Your best bet is looking in the capital city of Prague, where you will find work opportunities in public and private venues, and as a private tutor. Schools are willing to help with living arrangements as well. Russia. Situated as far east in Europe as you can travel, offers an opportunity to live in a mysterious and fascinating country and interact with its people. Most schools require some sort of TEFL certification, but will help out with your work visa once hired. TEFL stands for Teaching English as a Foreign Language, and certification is available by going to TEFL.org. The Middle East is particularly good for those with teaching experience and credentials. The Arab nations of the Persian Gulf offer relatively lucrative teaching opportunities that typically include benefits like free airfare, free housing, and health insurance. Many teaching opportunities can also be obtained locally in countries like Egypt and Morocco. Saudi Arabia has a growing need for teachers due to a government initiative to introduce the English language to university students who in turn look at the international job market. Riyadh, the capital, and Jeddah are the largest cities and are both known to be very safe. No TEFL certificate is required, but it is recommended and teaching experience is highly sought after. United Arab Emirates, UAE, is one of the most rapidly progressing countries in the Middle East and the perfect location for teachers looking for a rewarding experience. Teaching English here will immerse you in a blend of traditional Arabic culture and the ultra-modernity of Dubai with its futuristic feel. Most jobs require teaching experience and a commitment of 2 years, so make sure you qualify and are up to the terms. If you want to consider teaching abroad, do a bit of self-analysis. Are you okay doing this alone? Do you handle unfamiliar or uncomfortable situations well? Do you have patience? Can you teach others? Will you be able to live a very streamlined life in a dormitory-like setting and do without many of the comforts of home? Financially, are you okay with just breaking even, or do you need to be able to save money? Do you have money you can use to supplement your income for additional travel? Hint, Southeast Asia, China, and South Korea pay very well. Although no teacher certificate is required, I recommend you acquire TEFL certification. TEFL stands for Teaching English as a Foreign Language, and certification is available by going to TEFL.org. You don't need a degree in education, prior teaching experience, or even a college degree to get paid to teach English abroad. Find more info at www.myretirementreinvention.com/resources. Choose carefully where you'd like to teach. Issues vary by hiring company and by country. Some countries have age restrictions, as they have mandatory retirement ages that will exclude many over age 60. Other places have no restrictions. Do your own research. A good place to start is the website Go Overseas, www.gooverseas.com. It lists more than 900 programs you can explore. This website also offers some sage advice about different areas of the world you could teach in. If you aren't sure which countries to look at first, Asia is probably the best region for newbie teachers. You can find a decent paying job with no teaching experience, and the cost of living is relatively low in many places. How to apply. If you want to teach abroad, you need a resume that is a bit different from the one you use to hunt for a job in the States. Outline your coaching, tutoring, or teaching experience, paid or unpaid, along with travel experience that may make you more adaptable to this type of work. If you have strong writing ability demonstrated by published work, a blog, articles, website content, books, these need to be mentioned. Past skills that show you are adaptable and flexible should also be emphasized. Past work experience in any languages you speak beyond English should be stated clearly too. If you have a college degree and/or TEFL certificate, make sure you highlight that as well. Expect contact via email and for the company to do a Skype interview, video conferencing over the internet, before you get accepted. Companies may be anywhere in the world. Skype is a great way for them to determine if you are capable of the job, smart, but also have a personality and can interact with customers, partners, managers, and other executives. It helps them to get a feel for a candidate and a better understanding of their personality. Video interviews via Skype can present a new challenge to the job hunter. Candidates need to be comfortable using Skype and able to recover if there is a tech glitch in transmission. Appearing to be technically savvy is vital to making a good impression. Practice using Skype before the interview and expect several questions that ask you to outline your past work experience, offering examples of how you performed and behaved on the jobs. Skype interviews, do's and don'ts. Learning to use Skype is handy if you're moving to a different part of the States or to a new country. It's great for keeping in touch with friends and family. And Skype is often used for interviewing people in other locations too. Here are some key things to know if you are about to have a Skype interview. Ask in advance for all the details about the interview. What position is it for? How long will the interview be? How many people are interviewing you? Who will they be? Don't expect the interviewer to volunteer much, so ask and call back a second time if you need more clarification. Don't start out by apologizing for your being unfamiliar with Skype. That is not what the employer wants to hear. Practice using this technology several times so you know how to connect, reconnect, adjust the volume, etc. Pay attention to what you are wearing. Dress as you would if you were appearing in person. Select a conservative suit and be sure you do not have any plaids or bright prints, as these don't look good when viewed via a monitor.